Blog Talk Radio.
A month filled with chestnuts roasting by an open fire, holiday gatherings with family and friends, and most importantly, a time of hope, togetherness, and inspiration. So today, together, we take an inspirational walk with my very special guest, Joe Kibler. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, December 2nd. And how did we get to December already? Amazing. And once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. I want to thank all of you for joining us. We'd love to hear from you. So if you'd like to listen live or ask questions, you can dial 347-857-2710. That number again, 347-857-2710, or you can always email me with questions at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. That's goodvibe, V-I-B as in boy, E, experience, at gmail.com. Well, right now you are going to meet an amazing young man, and his name is Joe Kibler. Joe is 21 years of age and was born HIV positive, and HIV affected his neurological system and has prevented him from walking. Joe was told by doctors that he would never walk, but over the past 21 years, he has gone from wheelchair to walker, walker to crutches, and now he walks with a cane. His documentary, Walk On, follows his amazing journey as he trains for the 6.2-mile walk to raise funds for AIDS Walk Los Angeles. So please give a very special welcome to my guest today, Joe Kibler. Hey, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's I love being had. Thank you. it's so great to have you on the show, and I have just been following your story on Facebook and hearing your story from friends, and it's just quite an amazing story. So could you just tell our listeners, just to get us up to speed, what your journey has been like being born with HIV?
I mean, that's quite a journey, actually. It's honestly, from where I am now and where I began, I would never believe this would have happened. When I was born HIV positive, like you were saying, and for the first 10, 11 years of my life, I actually didn't know I was HIV positive. I thought I was just born with a disability, with cerebral palsy, and one day I found out from my doctor, because my mom had kept it for a while just until I was ready to really understand what it was to be HIV positive, and over the course of a doctor appointment, I found out, and it changed my life. And I kind of had to figure out, okay, well, what do I do from here? And I couldn't really tell anyone about being HIV positive. I was so young, and we were still afraid. It was early 90s, you know, the reaction to it, whether I would be positive or negative. And I went about 7 years keeping it in. And when I finally came out, it was just, it was a relief. It was a weight off my shoulders, and I felt wonderful. And over the last few years, I've been nothing but an open book. I've been proactive out there trying to raise awareness, and which is kind of what brought about the documentary. I mean, to be able to be here and know that I'm doing this when I was told that I may not live for this long, and to be able to go from the wheelchair to now walking with a cane and promoting myself and being able to meet all these great people, it's just a dream come true. And I really, honestly, no words could ever put it to justice. but
yeah,
I'll try.
I'm sure. Hence your documentary. And what? Who inspired you to tell your story through film?
Well, it's one of those things that, you know, you start telling people about your life and you make these relationships and people tend to just be like, oh, wow, you know, you went through all this. And I've kind of, it's been my story, so it's been hard to really judge. Like, yeah, you know, it's just my life. And I went and started going to film school and developing a love for entertainment and doing producing and casting and working in this field. And over the course of a year, I had many projects on my hand and finally came around that I wanted to do a little documentary for my thesis about why people go to the AIDS walk. And that's how it started, with why people walk and showing my journey through the walk itself. And I brought it around to a few people and they all said, well, you know, that's great, but we want to hear your story too, because you're the one doing this. And, you know, as much as we want you behind the camera, we also want you in front of it. And finally got shopped around to a teacher I had been a student with for a while, Mark Bashian, who came on role as the director and one of the producers and saw something far greater, which was a story about not only my perseverance to go out there and find out about these people who are doing the AIDS walk, but also my goals and what I've come to get to this point. And before I knew it, the ball started rolling and Walk On became an amazing thing.
It kind of has a life of its own. Once you kind of find a certain path, it just kind of builds and builds and builds. But I'm also very curious as to your experience as why do people walk? What did you learn about that?
Honestly, it runs the gamut. Like, I found every story imaginable. People who've been in relationships with somebody who's an HIV positive, they've either been a family member, them themselves are HIV positive. I mean, you know, growing up myself with it and with this virus and with the disease for these many years, it's amazing to meet all these people who are newly infected, who are out there showing their awareness and doing the walk themselves. And just, I mean, I think that's where the documentary gets down to, is showing that there's no one demographic. It affects everyone, whether it's personally or relationships or just in general. It affects every type of person. And it's really showing that there's no stigma to it. It's just something that can happen. And it can happen to somebody who's 50-year-old male, and it can happen to somebody who's 10-year-old female. And that's what we've seen. That's what we've been uncovering as we've been doing the documentary, is all these different people, an array of life, and people who are so positive and strong, and they're fighting. Along with me, they're fighting. And, like, it makes me want to be like, well, all the things I've dealt with are nothing. I mean, they're important to me, but they're, you know, nothing compared to some of the stories out there, and I think people need to hear about them.
I think you're absolutely correct, and unfortunately, AIDS, the words AIDS, HIV, HIV positive, it does create a stigma for a lot of people, and it's taboo, and they don't even want to go there in conversation or talk to people who have it. And you're very brave and to tell your story, to put it out there, and I think it's remarkable. What was it like when you first told your friends that you were HIV positive? How did they respond to you? How did they treat you?
Well, the first time I came out about being HIV positive, I was 17. I was a student at an acting camp called Showdown, and I was working for them and also doing their shows, and one of the exercises, one of the acting lessons, was to go up on stage and tell the audience, tell the people around you, your friends, something you've never told anyone before. And in front of about a good 40 so students, I stood up on stage and I said, well, my name is Joseph Kilbore and I have HIV. And in that moment, I didn't know what I was doing, but I felt it was right. And I got such an overwhelming positive reaction from it. I mean, everyone just stood up and started hugging me, and we just had this great moment that I'll never forget, and I'll always appreciate them for. And it gave me the strength to move on, to keep going and being, you know, open about everything that I am.
Well, that's a big risk, and it takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable, and oftentimes when we are vulnerable, that's where all the magic resides is that vulnerability, that place of the unknown. And it's just, I, you know, just thinking about you coming on the show, and part of the joy that I have in hosting How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes is hearing the flip side of people's lives, how they got to where they got. And I always try to say to people, you have to take that first step, because a lot of people prevent themselves from moving forward because it's very fear-based. We're a fear-based society. People tell them they can't. But to hear your story is so inspiring, because it puts everyone else's experience, or even my own, at bay. And you think, if somebody like Joe, who has these restrictions, can do something, then we all can. And
well, yeah,
that's what's so moving.
I think it's definitely, like, you know, I feel like what I have to share with people does and it can affect them, and can, you know, and I hear a lot of that. I've heard it a lot in my life. Oh, you know, when I hear your story, it makes me feel like, oh, well, my stuff's not as important. And the one thing I really do want to share is the fact that it is. It is. You have to take the stories you hear from people and the, you know, inspiration you get from people and put it into your own life. And I feel like everyone's weight is their own to carry. And, you know, everyone has their own journey. And what may be a, you know, thing that's hard for me to accomplish, or that's a weight on my shoulders, doesn't necessarily measure up to the same weight as someone else, but doesn't make it less important. And you have to take the things you learn from people and implement them in your own life for yourself and not for someone else or because of somebody else.
Right. Right. I think you mentioned that your mother was a big fan of yours, in a sense that she told you that you had to live your life as if it was your last year.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, she raised us believing that every year may be the last, so if it is, then what do we want to do with it?
And it makes you kind of look and not take that time for granted, and really move forward with your goals and your aspirations, and get involved. So tell us, where are you on the journey to raising funds for your movie?
Well, I'm very happy to actually say we just received a fiscal sponsorship, meaning that now all of our donations that we're getting through the woodwork are able to be tax deductible, which I really think is a big and major step into getting, in, you know, the awareness we need and getting the people involved that we want to get to show them, you know, what we're doing and the people we're working with. We're out there talking with our organizations like the Elizabeth Glazer Foundation, who is basically their sole thing is in the mother to child transfer of HIV and how far they've come. And I think, you know, that's an important thing for me because I am a subject. I am a direct, you know, subject of being a child who was transferred HIV by his mom. And to show that they're doing all these great things with new medications, with awareness and knowledge that they know, if you know you have it, you can prevent transferring it to your child. And I think that's just a wonderful thing. And so we're moving along. You know, we still need so much help, as anyone does when they're raising these kind of awareness and funds. But we're getting the ball rolling, and I'm feeling very, very happy.
Well, I just wanted to let people know that if there are those listeners who are interested in donating something to your cause, they can go to www.indiegogo.com/walkon, and that'll take them to your page, and they can make a donation there.
Yes.
So we can get this up and running.
Yes, exactly. Get people looking at the site, not only, you know, to go there to donate, but also to educate and to learn. And, I mean, there's so much great stuff on that website. If you go through it, we've cataloged so many experiences that we've gone through in the last few months, the video blogs showing our progress and what we've done and the people we've met and these wonderful relationships I've started with people. So, you know, when you think about the website, don't think about it as just some place to go donate, but to also educate yourself and find out a little bit more. And if you yourself can't donate, for people out there who are listening who can't donate, pass it along to someone you think who can, or pass it along to somebody who you think would benefit from just the awareness alone. I mean, especially if you're HIV positive and you may be listening. I mean, it's just, we want to hear from you, and we're willing to listen. You can comment on the page and start talking to us if you're interested in helping out in any way. I mean, there's so much more you can give back to these kind of things than just a financial.
Absolutely, and I think you're so right in mentioning how important awareness and education is, because with that kind of knowledge, prevention is at your fingertips, and that's because it is preventable. So people just need to be aware and informed, and it would make a lot of things easier. I'm curious though, what from the doctors telling you no, Joe, you can't walk, to your own progress from wheelchair to crutches to cane, what were the steps that you took to help yourself take those steps?
Well, there was definitely steps in my emotional steps and my physical steps. I mean, growing up, I was lucky enough to, when I was in middle school, to have gone to an all-disabled school, which gave me the physical therapy that I needed, which was giving me the kind of education I needed and the awareness of being around people who were like-minded and like me. And I think definitely it was a physical journey, you know, doing like water therapy and going through learning what I could do for myself to keep myself healthy. But not only, I mean, it wasn't just that, it was seeing people around me who were like kids who had no arms and no legs. They're the happiest kids I'd ever met. Some of my friends who, you know, I grew up with, who were just confident. And, you know, I was in a wheelchair basketball team with kids who had no arms, and they would play basketball with their feet and dribble the ball with their feet and dunk baskets and talk back to the refs. And I saw this going on as I was growing up, and it was just like, if they're doing it and they're able to do it and they're not worrying or keeping their mind focused on the negativity, then what's stopping me from doing it? And it was definitely 50-50, an emotional progress and a physical progress for me to get to where I am now.
So who was your biggest support through obviously what seems to have been the most trying part of your illness?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest support, I mean, was always, you know, my mom. It was always that person in my life who we kind of understood because we were on the same regimen. I mean, literally down to medications, we were going through the same thing. And I think we kind of helped each other live for something. And that definitely made it worth it. And, you know, my family around me, I mean, it was just, it was always something that I cared about. And I never had a moment to kind of stop. And I think always being busy with going through hospitals and going through school, I was always driving towards something. There was never a point, and there's still not a point, where I'm like, I don't know what's ahead of me.
So you have goals set for yourself?
Always. I've always had goals set for myself, and I always want to. I think, you know, if the moment you feel you've achieved everything you could in your life, well, then you've given up.
That's true. What would you say? Now that you've completed this documentary or walk on, how would you like to take that? Bump it up, as Emeril Lagasse says. How would you like to bump it up?
Well, I would say nothing is ever really complete, especially with a documentary. I think a lot of filmmakers out there, if anyone is listening who is a filmmaker, understands that nothing ever is really complete. It's just ripped away from your hand. And
what do you mean by that? That's a very interesting phrase.
Meaning that if you're an artist or if you're someone who is fighting for a cause or fighting to complete something, in your mind, what you're doing and what you're striving for is never really finished. It's just finished when someone says, okay, we need this now. We need to get it into a different level. We need to present it to people. You're done. And you always feel that inside you, that you still have so much more you could do. And I mean, with the documentary, we still have so much more we can do. We're still meeting with people, we're still going out there and talking with people who are HIV positive, who, you know, and I think it's something that even if the cameras aren't rolling, I'm still going, and I still feel it's going for the documentary. And, you know, even though at some point it will be done, it's never really done if you care about something. And I think that's just how filmmakers are. We're obsessive. We want the best, and sometimes you're always striving for the best until you feel you've achieved it, or really until you decide that you can move on to the next thing and then strive for that.
And probably instead of maybe my question should have been more. It's only the beginning. This film is only the beginning of where you will go, where it will take you on your journey to help bring more awareness to HIV, to AIDS, hear other people's story, how you can help other people. You know, when you've experienced something, it's one tends to help make it easier for the next person.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not only have I, you know, been doing this for, like, for other people to raise awareness for them, but it's educated me so much, more than I ever could believe. I mean, you know, I'd grown up with people who were disadvantaged, who had issues with disabilities, but through the documentary, I've gotten to meet so many people who are of my age, who are HIV positive, who've had it their entire life, that I never knew. That I never knew there was that group out there. And I think just coming across that was an education for me.
What do you think, meeting all kinds of interesting people along the making of this movie, what would you say is one thing you found out about somebody that was inspirational to you?
Well, I think what I was telling you before about how I didn't know until I was around 11 that I had it, and I kind of kept it, you know, bottled up for a while until I felt I was ready. I had met amazing people, these two sisters who were both HIV positive, who were like, you know, 13, 15, who were really young, and they're out there and they're open. And not only they're open, but they're doing speaking at, like, at these events and speaking in front of students and talking to them about their ideas and what they're going through. And that was something that was like just, it blew me away. It blew me away because they have to go through the middle school and the harshness of, you know, everyone's gone through high school, everyone's gone through middle school, and they know that it's tough times. And to be able to go through that and be open as you are and have to educate and be as mature as you can while being openly HIV positive, I mean, I didn't know if I could do that. And when I found that out about these two girls, it was just like, I don't know, I felt so much love and so much, you know, power for them, and I was impressed.
And you know, with all this bullying that it seems to be at the hot topic nowadays, the bullying, like you said, all these things have been going on. Bullying has been going on in middle school and high school for many years, but it's been brought to the public's attention because of the severity of it. Were you bullied going through school, and how did that affect you?
I was, I guess you could say, one of the lucky ones. In a sense of, I didn't feel a lot of bullying. I didn't get a lot of negativity. But I've had a few share of experiences. I had a very close friend of mine who I cared for, who her friend, I found out later on, would say things like, oh, how could you hug him? How could you touch him? Aren't you afraid? Aren't you worried you're going to get something? And that was, you know, that was heartbreaking for me. But it was something that I kind of had prepped myself for and was mature enough at that point to handle. But I've been very lucky that I've had the positive surrounding I have, which have helped me be the person I am and, you know, promote that to other people. But to hear the experiences that other people have had being bullied and sometimes to the point of sheer violence, it's overwhelmingly sad, because I feel like if people just took the time out to really educate themselves about what it is that they're bullying people on and what it is that really is going on with that person, I think a lot of this would not be happening. And hopefully through the things that we're doing, these talk shows and doing this kind of stuff, a lot less of that will start happening.
I think you're right. I think it's about intolerance, people that are different. People just don't understand. If you're not, if you don't come in the same box as somebody else, and it's, you're a different size box, and people don't know how to deal with you. And I think it's also part of your upbringing. If you're reared to be open to people who are different than you and to welcome that, because that's how, you know, how you learn about life and other people, is to get to know people, find out their story, and it's interesting. And basically, you know, we're all the same all over the world. We just come in different shapes and sizes and have interesting stories, and that's what's so amazing.
I completely agree. I mean, I always grew up saying that we all have a disability. Just some are outward, some are inner, and we all have to overcome them in some sort of obstacle.
That's right. I guess maybe if people thought about what is my disability, whether it's shyness, fearfulness, or whatever it is, if you kind of, in a sense, make fun of yourself with that, then it would be a lot easier to walk through it. And
oh, yeah, and I've had that in my own experience. I mean, I use humor as a way to live my life constantly with my friends. We're always joking about it and just joking about, you know, the disability, just being lighthearted, because I feel like if you can't laugh, you really can't live, and it's just something that, you know, I think helps.
Absolutely. And I, you are just a very talented person, and I wanted to also share with our listeners that you're also a musician and a composer.
Yes.
So,
I love music.
Who's your favorite artist?
My favorite artist would have to probably be Brandon Boyd of Incubus. I grew up on that music, and I think the reason I have such a strong feeling for that band in particular is that it was something that brought me and my older brothers, who is also a musician, who was the reason I got into music. It was the first band we ever got to share a concert with, and kind of brought us together. It was something we could agree on after, you know, years of being brothers and fighting and all that fun stuff. We were able to kind of understand that this band was something that was meaningful to both of us, and it got me into music and my brother's playing. I always grew up wanting to, you know, be like him and play guitar and play bass. And so I took on music as a way to kind of get closer with him.
Oh, that's great. So you play the guitar and you play the bass. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Cool. And you write your own songs?
I've been into writing and writing lyrics and poems since a very young age. I was always into writing and introducing it to people and play and seeing what they thought. And when I got into theater, I got into musicals. And my senior year of high school, I actually, with a composer, I worked on a musical that I was proud to be able to put up in Florida, and it was my first one-act musical.
And what was the name of the musical?
It was called Faceless High. It was dealing with conformity in high school and having to go through life with these three friends, and then you get into high school and everything starts kind of breaking down and everyone gets put into their boxes, like you kind of was saying before. And getting
so you're,
through that.
High school, what was a High School Musical? You're really the real High School Musical.
Yeah, I guess I'd be the basic ground of a High School Musical, only a little more high school, in a sense. I think a little bit more closer to the reality of what high school is and what it is for a lot of people.
High school was tough. High school was tough. I think I thought high school was not tough as in the sense of academically, but just on a social level. People are, like we were talking earlier, they can be bullying. There's a lot of cliques, and You have to fit in, and if you don't fit in, you're an outcast. And coming to terms with what it's like to not fit in and be different than anybody else, or if you want to be different, that's who you are. You don't want to fit in. It's a very interesting growth experience, high school.
I think it's it was funny because I know my high school experience kind of got split into two halves. I think the first 2 years, it was very, very hard for me. I was the only kid who was kind of like me, like being disabled, and I didn't handle it very well. I never wanted to go. And I think after having come out about being HIV positive, it was like a complete 180 in a sense of I completely took who I was and was proud of that and being who I was and being wanting to be an actor and wanting to be in performance and music and being okay with being HIV positive. It kind of brought me into a world where I could socialize with everyone because I didn't care. I didn't want to be just one thing, and I was kind of lucky enough to spend the last 2 years of my high school experience kind of being a nomad and using my disability almost as a positive thing, as a way to kind of like the key to the gate, you know, the key to the city in a sense, because it got me around to everyone and no one felt like I was intrusive or I was trying to be something I wasn't, and therefore I was able to be with everyone.
But it
and
sounds,
I got the word by every group.
It sounds from your story that you made people feel comfortable being around you, so your disability didn't affect
hinder
people getting to know you. That's, you're just Joe Kibler, and you happen to have a disability, and that's how it is. Because I think people are, just don't know what to say to somebody.
People like to put a category to it. I think just like they like to put, like, this person is a jock, this person is a geek, this person is a nerd, this person is disabled. Like, people like being able to put things into a place, and I think when they can't put something into a place, it's scary. And it's not sure how to approach somebody who isn't, you know, necessarily easy to kind of write off as, oh, that's that person or that's that type of person.
I think that's right. That's, people do want to put everybody in a specific niche category so they can feel more comfortable dealing with that person. They have an understanding of, oh, I know what that looks like. Oh, I know what it, you know, when somebody says, oh, I'm HIV positive, well, what does that look like to people?
Yeah.
And so if people don't know what that looks like or have an understanding of what the virus is, then they can't, in their mind, deal with somebody who has that. It's just, instead of wanting to figure out, oh, what is that? Let me talk to somebody who has that or learn more about it so I can just be open and aware through other people that have it.
Completely agree.
I a few years ago, I took a trip to South Africa, and I would have to say that would be one of my most interesting and amazing trips, going on a safari and going to South Africa. And I was telling somebody about the trip, and their comment was, well, aren't you afraid that you're going to get AIDS? And I thought that was just a very interesting, you know, they say you can get AIDS from monkeys, but I wasn't planning on sleeping with a monkey. but it's somebody's lack of education about AIDS. Like you were saying, people didn't want to hug you because the fear of becoming HIV positive. So it's just so amazing with knowledge, again, and being tolerant of everyone, we can just move forward much faster than where we are now.
I agree. I mean, it's astonishing, too, how many people still, I think it's almost a fear of being educated in a sense of, you know, not wanting to be shown as you don't know what you're talking about, or you don't necessarily know what to do or what to say. And there's such a, in this kind of world right now, to be always 100% accurate, and I think people are always fearful of asking questions when they don't know something. I mean, I had a friend who, you know, didn't understand really what HIV and AIDS was, and who was, you know, really, really asked questions, like, you know, he didn't know if you can get it from just breathing the same air. He didn't. And it was one of the things that I wanted to teach him about, and I wanted to make sure he knew. But it was also an eye-opening thing for me that people at such a level that are my age, that are even older than me, aren't as aware and don't know, and either didn't get the education they needed in schools because they weren't talking about it, or just didn't, you know, capture it. And I think, you know, hopefully in the next few years, that statistic of people who don't understand what it is will change.
Well, do you know what the statistics are for people who are born with HIV, how many there are?
Off the top of my head, I don't know how many. Actually, this year what we have done is, like when we had talked with people who are like from the Elizabeth Glaser Foundation,
uh-huh.
People who are being infected with HIV from birth have actually significantly decreased over the last decade alone. Like, I know it was... and I can't be completely quoted from this, but it went from being, you know, 260 people every day were being infected who were being born to almost 260 a year who were being transferred. And that's just because of the educational system of it. You know, they've gotten the medication to the point where you can actually, in utero, going through, actually, you know, slow down the process of the virus and transferring it over to a child. And it's just about knowing that you have it yourself and taking the proper precautions necessary with the person you're with the doctors who know you. And I mean, I know definitely in the last 10 years alone, that statistic has drastically decreased.
Well, and also getting back to high school or maybe even in junior high, I don't know what young people today are doing about sex, how young people are when they're experimenting with sex. And most men don't want to wear a condom, or women don't want their man to wear a condom. And I think it's important that when the young people are learning about sex education, that's the time when you talk about these things, because it's a whole different world than it was, let's say, 40 years ago in the 60s when it was free love and free sex and all that kind of a attitude. It's different now. So you're not only sleeping with the person you're sleeping with, you're sleeping with the many people that person has slept with. So you really have to be more mindful of your actions.
I think people these days tend to, put less involvement and, love into what it is to be with somebody and actually go through those steps. And I think it's a lot less, everyone's like, oh, well, just, it's sex and that's what it is. And I feel like they need to start putting it more into the school systems, too, because there's this fear of actually starting to talk about it. And I think school systems still feel like if you talk about it at that age, it's going to make them more want to. But I think giving them the steps and the ability to kind of understand that it is something you take when you're ready. And, once you're able to and feel like it's ready, you have to take the necessary precautions to go through with having sex with somebody or being with a partner. And not enough of that is really going on right now. And people just still feel like, still that sense of free love, but also they're not taking the proper precautions when they're going through the steps to be with somebody.
Well, don't you think that people still have that attitude of, oh, this will never happen to me?
Oh, yeah. I think everyone sort of has this superhero complex, going on that they're untouchable, that, they can still go through and they'll be okay. And, I kind of think of that as, well, you got to, educate yourself and watch your surroundings. And in a sense, I always see myself as that kind of like, this could happen. I tell people, if, you're not careful, if you you never know what can happen. I mean, my mom, my father, Abin, look, I'm here today. I mean, luckily I've taken my circumstance and turned it around to something that's positive. But I know in my own life, I would never want someone to have to go through what I've had to go through if I can prevent it. And I think if I can be that person so that people can see and be like, okay, well, he's learned from it, but I understand that there is an exact effect. There's a visual effect of what could happen if you're not careful.
And you're the perfect role model and spokesperson for, I think, that generation, because just like you said, people can see the effects of what can happen. If somebody, let's say, Magic Johnson, who is HIV positive, if he goes around to talk about his story, it's very important, but he's in a different place in his life as opposed to somebody like yourself who is 21, just starting out in life, relationships, career, and it kind of hits home a little bit more, I think, to the younger generation.
Yeah, and I think also having somebody, like you said, who is their age, who can kind of relate with them and understand what they're going through, even if I was born with it, I can still kind of understand what people who are newly infected, their thoughts may be going through, and have the education and have the knowledge and still be young and still be around their age to give them kind of the steps into what they need to do to, take care of themselves and always be healthy for themselves.
Yeah, and you kind of speak their lingo. You have so many different quivers in your case of all these different talents. You're a musician through poetry, through song, through your documentary, and just through public speaking, you know that language of the audience, of the young generation, and can to really tell them and impart on them this information, how important it is.
Right, and I think it's kind of like what we're going through right now when we've done the documentary. We found all these young people who are positive, and, you know, we really are in a time where, you know, this is generation positive, you know? And that's...
Oh, I kind of like that. I like that, generation positive. That's good. I think you came up with a new tag.
Yeah, well, that is something we will be coining, my director and I, is generation positive. And I think that's really what we're aiming at, and what we're showing people is that there is that generation now.
Well, and you also, there's hope. It's not something that, God forbid, you have it and your life is over. There's hope to have a life and hopefully a cure. So that's encouraging also. You're selling something very positive, and that's I think that's how people will listen, because there's something positive in your message.
Well, I'll never see it as something that I'm selling. The way I look at it is it's something I'm giving.
True. I didn't mean it selling in a...
No, I'm just saying in my way.
Yeah. But unfortunately, sometimes when we talk about diseases and therefore a nonprofit or a charity, it's in a sense, it's all subconsciously, it's all about a selling, in a sense, because you're trying to get to that person's sensibility of who they are to say, snap up, you know, snap out of it, wake up, and this is what's going on, that you have to be aware of these things. So it's, you know, unfortunately, everything is a business in a certain sense, but I am just very thrilled to have had you on the show, Joe, and I don't know where the time went. This was just so amazing. Time flew by.
It did.
And I want you to give out your contact information for people who perhaps would like to talk to you about their own personal issues. What's the best way for people to contact you?
If they want to reach me, the best way is through the walk-on email will be the best way to reach me, and that is walkondocumentary@gmail.com.
Okay.
If they have anything they want to, if they want to be inquisitive and ask questions or send their comments or their own personal stories, if they'd like to be a part in some way with the documentary, I think that's definitely the best way to be reached is walkondocumentary@gmail.com.
Great. And if people want to take a look at your promo for Walk On and perhaps donate a tax-deductible donation, make a tax-deductible donation, they can go to indiegogo.com/walkon.
That is correct.
I wish you much success on your journey, Joe, with your documentary, and I think what you're doing is just wonderful. You inspired me to move forward in my own life, so please continue that inspiration, I'm sure, for many people. So thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure, and I hope we have many time to talk in the future, and we'll see this go through fruition and see what it can do.
Beautiful. I'd love to have you come back on and let me know, in the next few months to see your progress. I'd be more than happy to have you on, and you can share the good news with us at that time.
Absolutely.
All right, great. Thank you, Joe. Once again, you can view Joe's promo for his walk-on documentary at indiegogo.com/walkon. And I'd like to thank all of you listening to the show today, and again to Joe Kibler for his inspirational story. So please join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes, as my guest will be best-selling author and international speaker Barbara Hofmeister. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you again for joining me and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. Hope to see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes.